Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Health Blast Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher of Alternative Medicine and Wellness Radio. It is going to be a great year, 2015. We are going to have several of our guests who are inspirational, telling their stories, sharing a lot of their tips about how to live a holistic life and love it. We all have all kinds of challenges these days, and we say we'll try things, we don't get the greatest results, or sometimes it's just mediocre. But we're going to learn to love a holistic life. Isn't that great? We're going to learn that it's great to get up in the morning. It's fabulous if it rains. And it's absolutely incredible that we have these challenges and all of the things we can learn from that. And isn't life just a roller coaster? So thank you so much for joining us. Please check us out on Health Blast Radio on Facebook and also Health Blast 2015 on Twitter. Also, our website, drjeanettegallagher.com, for more information. We also have a women over the age of 50 group starting February 1st, which will be sharing a lot of information about how to help us and ourselves. As we are women, we are also caregivers, and we are also part of this world that will be bringing more compassion and empathy towards others. Please do join. Please do check it out on our website, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher. And now, back to the show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us. This is Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and it's a pleasure to have you with us here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. Today, we are going to be talking about a topic near and dear to my heart, caregivers. We all have had experience being a caregiver in our lives. We've also potentially been on the receiving end of a caregiver when we needed some help. So really, what is this word all about? You know, I really think we're going to have a great show today because we're going to define what the word really means, how you can help others, but also so that you're not impaled into the situation and having yourself and your life taken down, and you're not, and you end up with two people or several people, depending if it's a family or not, and whether you just end up losing everybody's sight of who they are, what the actual goal is, what the actual purpose is, and how to live day to day. It's not always sometimes about the end result. It's sometimes about being in the moment. Today my guest is Peter Rosenberg. He's the author of Hope for the Caregiver, Encouraging Words to Strengthen Your Spirit. And he's going to be sharing his personal story and how he helps others to find the support caregivers so desperately need, because really there's not much help out there. And once you find yourself slipping into that phase, it's really sometimes very difficult to ask for help. Peter, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you, Dr. Jeanette. And I really like the way you opened this with, let's define what a caregiver is.
Yes.
Sometimes we don't even know that. Sometimes we're serving as one and we don't even realize that's what we are. I did a video series of event for AARP with Jeff Foxworthy. I asked Jeff if he wanted to do this with me on You Might Be a Caregiver If. And he's never lent that phrase of you might be a redneck if to anything else, but I asked him, so would you do this with me? He said, well, write out a few jokes and we'll see. And I said, these aren't jokes. This is my life. And,
yeah.
And so we came up with some, like, if you could open up a door with your butt to get the wheelchair through, you're probably a caregiver. If you have a professional carpet cleaner on retainer, you're probably a caregiver. If you've ever cooked a turkey with dressing while changing a dressing, you're probably a caregiver. So we learned what it is, and I appreciate the opportunity to come on and just share this with you.
And, you know, I think so many people, there's so many different levels of caregivers because we're helping others not only in physical ailments or physical situations that are occurring, but sometimes as emotional ones, spiritual ones. And, you know, as we look with Alzheimer's and dementia, it's just going through the roof. Or with even just old age as a caregiver. So there are so many different kinds of caregiving that you need to give out. People don't even think that's what they are. They just see it as I'm doing something. And then sometimes when the load gets too heavy, they turn around, they dump it off at the door, and then they walk away, which is, I've seen a lot of those patterns too.
Well, a caregiver is somebody, I've come to define it as this, somebody who volunteers to daily put themselves between a vulnerable loved one and disaster.
Yeah.
And this is what we do. We get up and we do it again every single day, whether it's an aging parent or, in my case, a spouse with disability. My brother and his wife have a daughter with cerebral palsy and severe cognitive issues. She's 26 years old. I've been a caregiver now for almost 30 years for my wife through a pretty significant journey. I mean, she's had 78 surgeries, gave up both of her legs in the 90s, 60-plus doctors, 12 hospitals, 7 insurance companies, and $9 million in medical bills. This has been going on since Reagan was president. So it gives you a perspective, and it's ongoing. I mean, it hasn't stopped. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a place where, well, okay, we're done with all that, now we just go live our life. No, this is our life, just constant medical crisis and so forth. So when you get up and daily do this every day, just without end, no expiration date, you've got to come to grips with certain realities. A lot of people I've seen, Dr. Jeanette, have gone out there and recklessly hurled themselves at a situation. Okay, we're gonna throw everything at helping mom and dad right now, or dad fell, or mom's got Alzheimer's, and we're gonna do this, and then when they die, we'll get back on with our lives.
Yeah.
Well, they assume that they're gonna outlive that loved one. And that's a very, very dangerous thing to do. And I talked to a lady the other day, told me she had done this very thing with her father, who started going down the path with Alzheimer's. 7 years later, she was bankrupt. She'd lost her business, everything else, because she was throwing herself into taking care of her dad without any thought whatsoever to taking care of her own business. And you're not helping someone if you go down into the toilet. I mean, it's mighty hard to help people if you're gasping for air.
And this is what I try to do. And I think that's
so
vitally important to really focus on that, too. I know my husband, he had taken care of his father for a while with Alzheimer's, and then they couldn't do anymore, he and his mother, so they had the father go to a nursing home, and he passed away within 2 weeks of being there because he didn't want to be there. And the mother swore, you know, don't you ever put me in one of those. And I think that phrase really impaled him into a situation which he had to accept or felt obliged to accept. And, you know, several years later, of course, she also had Alzheimer's then, and he took care of her for 10 years. And he lost every single bit of savings. He lost all of his jobs. He lost everything and anything that was attached to himself. And then when she passed away, the rebuilding is incredible. And sometimes it's hard for people to even pick up after that. It's like, I lost, 15, 20 years of my life. What do you expect me to do now when I'm 60, right? And so many people have gone through that.
Well, we make these emotional promises. Don't you ever do such and such. And then that guilt of that. And one of the things that caregivers struggle with a lot is guilt. I mean, Dr. Jeanette, you know this. There is no problem so bad that you can't make it worse with guilt. And this is what we do. And we have loved ones who put this unreasonable demand on us on how we should take care of them. They're the ones suffering, and we feel obligated to do this. Well, what I'm trying to do, as many people as I can, is grab as many caregivers as I can and pull them aside and say, look, there's a better way. I remember talking to a guy the other day. He's a retired physician. And we were sitting over a cup of coffee, and he was just kind of looking down at his coffee, and he had gained a good bit of weight, and I asked, and his wife has Parkinson's, and he's been taking care of her just day and night, taking care of her. And I said, do you have the resources to bring someone in to help? You know, and he was so discouraged. He was telling how he missed playing golf with his buddies. I mean, he was so isolated from all this stuff. And I said, do you have the resources to bring somebody in for help? And he said, well, she's not comfortable with that. And I said, well, I didn't ask what she was comfortable with. I asked if you had the resources to bring someone in for help. I said, sometimes you're going to have to make a unilateral decision for the betterment of the unit. The person who is suffering, the person who has the affliction, oftentimes has it so close up in their face that that's all they can see. They can't see beyond their own immediate need, which is great. But we as caregivers have to make better decisions for the betterment of the unit, not just of the individual. And the unit is better served by having a healthy caregiver. And see, caregivers suffer from the three I's. And I talk about this in my new book. It's called Hope for the Caregiver. And Hope for the Caregiver is based on the premise that we as caregivers can live a more healthy, calm, serene, and dare even I say it, joyful life while having to look at grim realities. And my wife is a double amputee. Must I be? I'm not helping her if I cut off my own legs just so I can empathize with her. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the kind of that I'm taking it way out to the absurd, but this is what I'm trying to help people understand. You're not helping somebody by becoming a husk of a person. So we suffer from the three I's. We lose our independence, like this fellow did. He couldn't get out and play golf with his buddies. We become isolated, like this fellow did. He couldn't get out and play golf with his buddies. And we lose our identity. He couldn't even speak in first person singular when I asked him, do you have the resources? No, she's not comfortable with that. They speak in third person singular or first person plural. Ask a caregiver how they're doing. Well, we just got home from the hospital. Oh, she's having a bad day. Or she's really struggling, or he's not doing too well. It's very, very difficult for them to speak in first-person singular until they start carving out their own identity and saying, you know what, I'm tired, I hurt, I'm struggling, I'm hacked off, I hate this, I'm weary, mm-hmm. I'm afraid. Use those I words, and then you can start the journey towards a healthy lifestyle as a caregiver, understanding that, yes, we may grieve as we walk through these horrific things that we have to see. We may grieve and we may weep, but we can still be healthy as we do it. We're not helping them if we burn ourselves out. And that's the message that I'm trying to do with my book, with my radio show, with speaking at places and conferences and so forth, is what does it look like to help these people who are helping people?
You know, I have found this a lot of times working with patients who were at the end of life, and I would say to them, what is it for you today? And they would go into a corner and they would tell you something deep and dark, you know, into their soul. And sometimes they would say, well, you know, I'm really worried about my spouse. You know, we bought a new car, and how are they going to be able to take care of the car payments? Or I'm really worried, you know, I didn't get all this done yet. You know, how am I going to be able to get all this finished, because they're not going to be able to do it? And sometimes you look at people even that are coming in and they want to be healed, as we would call it. And I always say to them, what did you leave at home that you really is holding you back from healing? You know, that which we always what is holding us back is sometimes what we're leaving at home. And sometimes it's our spirit. It's part of our soul. It's part of our heart. It's part of something that's so deep and dark in that secret that you don't want to say it. So I find a lot of times, you know, when you have caregivers around, that is exactly what they don't want other people in the house to know. They don't want them to know that they're feeling vulnerable, that they can't go to the bathroom for themselves, or that they get angry sometimes, or that they really feel very guilty, or whatever it might be. All of these emotions are all in a bag, and they've all sometimes, for many people, they might be disproportionate, or for other people, they might just be... They're in a whirlwind all the time. You don't know what's going to come at you. And I think a lot of this is really the vortex, you know, that you look at and you say, how can a caregiver pick all of the parts out where they can help them? And how can they take the parts that they can help them with and get help from outside also?
Well, I think there's several things on that. I think the dynamics of living with somebody with, in my case, I have somebody with a severe disability, enormous amount of pain all the time, mm-hmm. just relentless pain now since 1983. And that's a long time to be living with a hurt body. And they don't want to be in that position. And they feel frustrated. Right. They feel angry, you know, there's all kinds of dynamics that go on with that. My wife was in her wheelchair the other day, and she didn't have her prosthetic legs on, and she reached for something, and she fell out of her chair. Well, that's humiliating for her. It's embarrassing for her. It's painful. It's scary. It's heartbreaking. There's a chapter in my book that says they're going to fall. They're going to fall, and there's nothing I can do about it. Now, I can sit there and lecture her about safety because she reached for something that she shouldn't have reached for. I could lecture her. I could fuss at her. I could whatever. Or I could just hold her and help her get her back in her chair and just say, you know what, it's okay. We're here. It's all good. You're okay. We'll dust off and safety first, and we move on. And they don't want to be in that position. They really don't. And mm-hmm. that frustration drives them in ways that we can't, as caregivers, understand. And we can't fix that for them. I didn't do this to my wife. I can't fix this. I can't change it. I can't cure it. And so I'm not going to be her processor coach as she deals with this. I'll be a supportive, loving husband to the best of my abilities, but I'm not trained to be a therapist for her. And she's got her own experience that she needs to experience. She's got her own journey that she needs to take. And if she, you know, if she needs to process these things, there are people out there who can walk with her through mm-hmm. that journey that are trained mental health professionals. The same thing for me as a caregiver. One of the things I recommend for caregivers, I have a kind of a 1-2-30 program that I do. Everything is 1, 2, and 30. I try to do something very simple for people. I don't do complicated things. I remember, you'd appreciate mm-hmm. this, some guy in Florida was offering an 8-week class on caregiver stress. And I thought, are you out of your freaking mind? I'm not going to go to your class for 8 weeks on dealing with this. I need an 8-second class. I mean, who in the right mind is going to pay for an 8-week class on caregiver stress? And that people that just don't have any stress in their life, they got time to go do that. And I thought, I need to get something that's easy for people, you know, that they can remember in the moment when the crisis hits. So, you know, for when you're dealing with your emotional health, for example, I recommend one counseling session per month, every month, with a trained mental health professional. It's got to be somebody that's got that has some real acumen. Don't get somebody right out of school doing this either. Somebody that really knows
sure.
their business. And been around a little bit, and been around family dynamics a lot. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be a psychiatrist. It doesn't have to be a psychologist. It could be, you know, a social worker, a licensed mental health counselor, whatever. But it doesn't need to be like a clergy member, because they're not set up for the long haul. You know, mm-hmm. they're trained for short-term stuff. But you need somebody who's got training for long-term mental health issues and so forth. But having one counselor to bounce things off of, to develop a plan. I had a lady call into my show the other day who was taking care of her mother with Parkinson's, and nobody was helping her in the family. And I said, well, how about sitting down with a counselor once a month and then develop a plan to confront the family on how they can get involved? Because I don't think you sound like you're very comfortable doing that by yourself. She said, no way, I'm not comfortable with that. But so mm-hmm. I said, well, how about enlisting the help of a professional? Because that's what they do. That's what professionals right. do. They can mediate. They don't bring that baggage. So get that one counseling session a month minimum. And then I recommend support groups, at least two a month. But I go 2-3 times a week for myself. Mm-hmm. Just to be not to fix a situation and not to learn how to fix things with my wife, but to learn how other people are navigating the journey. I've been a caregiver now for 3 decades, and I still have to walk through some difficult things where I've got to grow and learn. And so I go to support groups, and if you have somebody with Alzheimer's, guess what? There's an Alzheimer's support group somewhere near you. Mm-hmm. If you have Parkinson's or whatever, there's all kinds of stuff, and your counselor can recommend one to you. It doesn't have to be perfect, and you don't have to agree with everybody. You don't have to like everybody. But it's important to learn to listen and be a part of a community that's struggling with trying to control something that they can't control. Because that's what support groups are. They're wrestling with something that is beyond their control, and that's why that's what you glean from this when you go. And then I also recommend that you spend 30 days minimum a year in some type of church setting that you could go to, whether your worship center or whatever, because it engages you in the community. Now, you can't go every Saturday or every Sunday or every time the doors are open, but you can go, you know, an average of 30 times a year, and it right. engages you in the community. You're pushing yourself to be involved in a community of care and love and support and faith, and I think faith is incredibly important to that. I bring to this with my Christian faith. I couldn't do this without this. And so I feel that it's vitally important that we take practical steps to push ourselves as caregivers to engage in the community. Otherwise, we become isolated. When we become isolated, you know, we're going to make bad decisions. And you've been there when people come into your office, into your right. world, and they've made bad decisions, and you're there to kind of, with your mop and bucket, to kind of help clean mm-hmm. up the carnage. Well, we yeah. can make better decisions if we're not isolating ourselves.
And you know what, too? I think that sometimes as you go through this process, you start finding out as a caregiver, you say, well, there's parts of myself that are now some people use the word lacking. I don't have this type of relationship, or I don't have this part. We used to go out and we used to do a certain activity, and we can't do it anymore. Or in the case of Alzheimer's, you can't have a rational conversation of the intellectual level that you might have had in the past. Or you might not, for some people, have a loving relationship that you might have had in the past. So there's a whole lot of loss, not only on the person that you're helping, but also the caregiver has that loss in many instances. And that's important to be able to note there, because what you don't potentially want to do either is if you're still in a relationship where you're still helping someone because it's a loving relationship, you don't want to go outside of that and go to these type facilities or getting help, and you end up, in other words, finding help for those pieces outside of your relationship and therefore creating a triangle. So it's really important about where you are, being secure and safe where you are, and also the person you're helping with being secure and safe there and having a firm relationship and not looking outside of it, which a lot of, as people age or things go on, things really do, in many cases, can go that way.
Well, and you become, there's several different ways this thing gets triangulated here. One of them is you've got one spouse taking care of aging parents that's pulled in two different directions, and then there's a spouse left out in the cold while that one spouse is, and usually it's a woman. The average caregiver is a 49-year-old woman taking care of her aging parent. And so then the relationship becomes fractured because the caregiver is pulled in two different loyalties. Mm-hmm. And they can't, they can't be all that to that husband and to those parents. And then the relationships get triangulated. And it doesn't necessarily have to go into outside the marriage of immorality and adultery and so forth, even though it may lead to that. It can just simply be fractured relationships. And it's hard to know how to build that up. And so I would say, you'll laugh at this, Dr. Jim, but one of the things I'm on a kick to do is I'm on a kick to show men how to do laundry.
Yeah.
And cook and vacuum and clean and go grocery shopping and not just buy macaroni and cheese in a box. I mean, there's if the average caregiver is a woman taking care of her parents, why in the world are men not throwing their weight into doing the laundry? Now, a lot of guys are, but I was at a conference in Denver this weekend, and I had a show of hands. I said, all right, everybody here, raise your hands, you men, if you know how to do laundry. And a lot of men kind of half-heartedly raised their hands. Now, I said, now, I want you to raise your hands, women, if they verified that they know how to do laundry with you.
Right.
And nobody raised their hand because the men were just evidently screwing up the laundry. They thought they could run a machine, but they couldn't.
Right.
Well, that may sound like a small thing, doing the laundry. But all of a sudden, when you've got a spouse who has traditionally done particular things around the house and one spouse that's done his thing, or you know what I'm saying, the roles that they have.
Right.
When you get into a caregiving situation, those things go out the window.
Yes.
And everybody's got to pitch in at levels that they may not feel comfortable doing, but they're going to have to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So these men that are coming home and they expect a certain dinner and certain things about the house and so forth, that's got to change.
It's time to get over that paradigm, huh?
Yeah. We left that back with a horse and buggy.
Right.
And so, my father, I was one of six children, five boys and one girl, and my father pulled all us boys together. Dad was also a captain of the Navy, and he said, your mother is not your maid. And I learned that from a very early age. And I can bring home the bacon, fry it up in a pan, and never let you forget of me. But that's how you start preserving the relationship, is that you stop trying to hang on to outdated roles and paradigms and everything else, and you realize, okay, we're going to have to learn some new skill sets here. And then you have to learn how to engage a caregiver. What does it look like to help a caregiver? What does that even look like? And somebody asked me that the other day, and I said, here's what it looks like. And I'll give you a description from my perspective of what it looks like to a caregiver. So you men that are listening to this, pay attention. You women that are listening to this that are not caregivers, pass this on to someone that is. When you see somebody who is serving as a caregiver, look them, pull them aside and quietly, and I mean gently, say this to them, because understand that they are probably really close to the edge. They are afraid. They are F-R-A-Y-E-D, not afraid. They are afraid too, but they are afraid. They are scared. They are frustrated. They're just brittle, and they are always on duty, so they're just kind of nervous all the time or frustrated. So be very gentle with them and just say simply this, just to start the conversation with this: I see you.
Yes.
Look them in the eyeballs and say, I see you. And then say, and I see what you're trying to carry and what is on your shoulders, and I hurt for you. And if you just start with that, if you just let them know that you see them. I can't tell you, Dr. Jeanette, how many people have asked over the years about my wife. I can't tell you. There's too many. But I can count the ones that ask about me.
Yes.
And I'm the guy that's holding it all on the rails. And so this is what I'm on a quest for and on a mission for. Maybe it's even a crusade, yay, even, of trying to reach my fellow caregivers to say, look, here's how we're going to navigate this without you losing your sanity and pulling your hair out and just running screaming into the night. And then to the non-caregivers, I said, here's how you help somebody. Don't ask a caregiver, well, let me know if there's something I can do to help you.
Oh, I
don't
know.
Don't do that. Because now I got to think of something for you to do.
Right.
And don't just willy-nilly say, well, I'm going to pray for you.
Yeah.
Well, what does that even mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to go to the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, the God of the universe, and you're going to ask him what? And then you're going to expect what in return? And then you want me to do what with that information? It's like going to the post office and you see somebody carrying a bunch of boxes, and you say, well, brother, you look to be burdened down. I'm going to pray for you. Well, hold the door while you do it. You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing we need to be doing. We can do things as we pray. I surely want people to pray. Yes, please pray for me, but don't trip me or don't try to make yourself feel better by just telling me you're going to pray and thinking you've actually done something.
Yeah.
That's not smart. I think we can do better than that, and I think we can care for people better than that. And sometimes all we can do is grieve with them, Dr. Jeanette. That's all we can do. But caregivers carry around so much unmanifested grief because they're watching something grim and frustrating and hard and painful, and it's happening with no expiration date. I tell people it's kind of like, you know, the old stereotypes of the guy whose wife is going into labor and he's running around like an idiot and he leaves the suitcase, he leaves her, he forgets the keys, he can't figure out how to do anything. and then he gets to the hospital and it's screaming and it's bloody and it's messy and he's fainting and passing out. We're all laughing at him because he's acting like a fool. And then the baby comes and everybody settles down and it's okay.
Right.
But while his woman is in distress, he's a nut job. Well, what happens if the baby never comes?
Right.
That's my life. That is my life. That there's pain, there's drama, there's crisis, there's blood, there's seizures, there's all these things, and the baby never comes. I mean, there's not an end to it, a happy ending to that. And so if you don't come to grips with living a healthy life in the midst of that, you're not going to make it. And this is what caregivers are dealing with. They're dealing with nonstop crisis after crisis after crisis, these parents of special needs children. You know, they're looking at this child that they brought into the world struggle on levels that they can't even comprehend, and they feel guilty because they brought the child into the world or whatever, or they're just tired and they just want the child to stop crying and screaming. I've got a first cousin who has a child that just screams relentlessly. People with autism, children with autism doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel guilty for all these things, and they just want a moment's peace. And 100% of the caregivers I've talked to, now, there may be more that don't fit this model, but 100% that I've talked to, they don't want any kind of exotic entertainment to whisk them away. I mean, you couldn't give me a worse gift than to put me on a cruise.
Oh, for sure.
I mean,
yes.
Oh, my Lord. If you put me on a cruise, I'm just going to jump off the back. I'm going to Titanic that sucker right then and just jump off. And because the last thing I want is to be on a ship full of demanding, needy people.
Yeah.
We caregivers just want to – the best gift somebody ever gave me was a couple friend of mine, and I was on the way back and forth to the hospital, and I was on the way back up. It was late at night, and they set me in their kitchen. They said, sit down right here, and they brought me a bowl of vegetable soup and some cornbread, and they said, sit and be still. Let us feed you. And I thought, they got it. They understood that I don't need, you know, a weekend at Caesar's Palace in Vegas. I just need a quiet bowl of soup and to collect my thoughts. And I need somebody to care for me for just a moment and tell me it's okay for me not to rush back up to the hospital. And this is what I'm trying to do, Dr. Jeanette, with everything that I have, is to reach those people that are just like that, that 22-year-old version of myself who took this thing on. My wife was already hurt when I met her, and I didn't understand what all this meant, and I didn't know what was coming down the pike. And so I want to reach that 22-year-old version of myself that's out there. I want to reach these families that are taking care of aging parents, and they're just grieving in their spirit, but they don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I give practical things. I give, you know, I hit it on every level: the health, the emotions, the lifestyle, the profession, your money, your endurance. Mm-hmm. You spell it all together. It says, "Help me," and that's what I do. And my heart just breaks for what these folks are going through. And I can help with this. And it's something simple. It's something gentle. But it's not a program fix kind of thing. You're not going to fix this thing. But we can get stronger, and a step in the right direction is two steps away from the wrong direction. And that's my comfort.
Well,
sorry,
know,
I went
Peter,
on a little bit long there, Dr. Jeanette.
That's okay. But also, too, I look at my side, too, you know, when patients come to me and they're in these situations. And I always say the first words out of, you know, the get-go is, what is it you're looking for, or what is it, or where are you in this space? Sometimes we look at people, and I think you really have to ask the person you're caring for, what is it they feel they need? And it's sometimes not always, do I need to have something fancy, or do I need to have something that a lot of people can't attain? Sometimes they just need a hug. Sometimes they just need you to sit with them for a moment. Sometimes they just need you to go away. You know, so it's very conscious, too, about being able to ask the person you're caring for, what are their needs also. So many times, you know, when people in their ages of like 50 or 60 are taking care of their parents who are maybe in their 80s and 90s, and I always tell this story that the elderly woman's in the hospital, and she says, oh, I'm really hungry. And the daughter says, oh, I'll go get you something to eat. I know what you love to eat. And she brings back fried chicken. She says, this is what we always had when I was a kid. And the mother says, oh, well, that's wonderful, but all of a sudden I just don't feel good. I'll eat it after you leave. And then when after she leaves, the daughter leaves, she throws in the garbage. She says, doesn't she know I don't have teeth anymore? You know? And, you know, it's not even asking the people, you know, how they are feeling on that other end also, and not pulling, just as you say, you know, feelings crossing over so much and assuming for the other person when really you need to be asking those things if you can.
Well, I think you do. I think there's a lot of asking on both sides of it. I think that we don't know what another person's thinking, so we have to do the best we can to understand that. And I think that when it comes to helping a caregiver, and that's where my expertise is, I'm not going to tell people how to take care of their loved one because that's unique to what they're going through.
Right.
But I know with the caregiver that we don't always know what we need.
Right.
We don't know how to articulate it. Go back to the thing. We don't know how to even speak in first person singular sometimes. So the first thing you can do is just, you know, again, let them know that you see them. The second thing you do is give them a safe place to be able to express that.
Correct.
That without judgment, without trying to make them feel, oh, you shouldn't say that. Or, you know, if they need to say, look, I hate this person. I don't even want to take care of them. I'm tired of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. Let them say it. Okay,
right.
It doesn't mean they're not going to show up for work the next day and continue doing it. But they need to be able to be honest with how they feel and get that stuff out. It's going to come out. The question is, can it come out in a healthy, safe environment, or is it going to come out in a destructive environment? And that's the thing that we as friends of caregivers can do, is we can help them know that it's a safe place. No judgment, just let them share it. And that's why support groups are so much so valuable, I believe, is that because it does give an opportunity just to be able to express what's going on in your heart in a safe environment.
Because sometimes, you know, in some instances I've seen, you know, when people are very ill, they there's a lot of misplaced guilt that comes about. You know, sometimes the people who are ill, they just spew like nobody's business, and it's sort of like they put a lot of guilt on people. And sometimes caregivers who aren't right, who aren't centered or haven't taken on this this helping of the other person, they also might be doing it and spewing their own anger, frustration. And sometimes that really has to be shut down pretty quickly and come from a place of loving or caring, or is this, you know, really for me or is it not for me, for both parties?
Well, I think I go back to my opening statement of you need to have a professional carpet cleaner on retainer, because there's a lot of spewing that goes on emotionally and physically.
Yes.
And you so sometimes I bet you feel like your job is a carpet cleaner, isn't it?
Right.
Because, you know, you're steam cleaning a lot of carnage that comes up with people emotionally and physically. I've done both. I think that there is that situation where there's all this stuff comes out. I remember the story of a guy that went and sat under a tree on a bench, and the tree was filled with pigeons. Well, in a matter of just seconds, the pigeons do what pigeons do.
Right.
And the guy was just covered with stuff. And he was so mad, and he just wanted to throw rocks at the pigeon and cut the tree down. And his wife told him and said, it wasn't me, by the way. I wasn't the guy, but it wasn't my wife. His wife told him, hey, they're not doing it to you. They're just doing it.
Right.
And I thought, man, that's a teachable moment right there. If you can see that loved one that you have, they're not doing this to you. They're not setting up to see, waking up every day to say, okay, how can I screw up my wife's life or my husband's life or my kid's life or whatever.
Right.
They're just doing it out of some kind of stuff. If they're being hysterical, guess what? It's historical. There's something to this. There's a story behind this, and there's a reason for it. It may be medication. It may be whatever, but they're not doing it to you. You just happen to be the closest person to them. And likewise, you know, for caregivers that are dealing with the stress, you know, we spew out stuff. We get venomous. We get to the breaking point, and then we say and do things. And we need to understand we're not trying to hurt somebody. We're reacting all the time. And what my goal is through what I do with the show and the book and everything else is just to try to help caregivers more healthily respond instead of reacting. And if we can learn how to detach from this thing, and detaching doesn't mean disconnecting and severing. That's amputation. Detaching is unlocking for a minute. And you don't have to be so up into business with it. It's like, you ever been to an IMAX movie?
No.
You ever seen a movie on IMAX? Well, go sometime. It'll part your hair. It's so big. You will come out with a new hairdo. I promise you. It's so big.
And goodness.
That's what it's like. For a lot of times, the people that are dealing with these kinds of realities, for the caregivers and for the loved one, that it's so up in their face, it's massive. And what my job and my goal and my passion is to help people back away from that so that it looks like it's on more of an iPad. And if on a good day, we may be able to get it down to an iPhone so that it's not the hugest thing in the world that we're looking at. It may seem that way at times, but that's because of our perspective. And if we can get a better perspective with the help of loving friends, trained counselors, support groups, and so forth, then we can put this thing in its proper perspective and realize, oh, she's not doing this to me. She's just doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to take it personally. I don't have to go to every fight that I get a ticket to. You know, you don't have to do that. You know, you get into these tug of wars with folks when you're dealing with this situation like this, and your listeners will truly get this. I know y'all are listening out there, they're thinking, oh my gosh, that's our life. You get in this tug of wars. I want this, or you want this, or you need to do this, whatever. Well, there's only two possible outcomes in a tug of war. If you win, you end up on your butt. If you lose, you end up on your face.
Mm-hmm.
Don't pick up the rope.
Yeah.
Just don't pick up the rope. Let it go. You don't have to get into a scrap with everyone. Try to find a way to exit gracefully from it and let it cool down. I always tell people to take a bottle of water with you pretty much everywhere you go. That way you can put something else in your mouth besides words.
Yes.
And, you know, and that will diffuse a lot of situations if we don't talk.
We've had a real run on this lately where a lot of people are saying, well, so-and-so is saying something and it's very hurtful. Or we've had, this is just emotional things, and or my wife threw something at me. She never did that before. Or my brother-in-law, he's just crazy. I don't know what he said or what he's saying. And I always say the first thing is do not engage. Just stop. Just do not engage and just stand there or just walk away, whatever it is, but do not engage, because once you engage, you've already, like, as we say, you bought the farm, you know. So if you do not engage, then you have a chance to step back and look at it and see for what it really is. Now, let's, for 1 second, let's touch on this. I mean, there's a lot of people. I'm almost 60, and I can tell you in the decades of the 50s and 60s, a lot of people had a lot of abuse going on. There was a lot of drinking. There was, you know, it was right after the war, you know, a lot of abuse, women's rights, all that other stuff. And there is women now and men in their 70s and 80s and 90s where it's really coming forefront of how they've lived their lives and those things that they've quietly tucked away, and now they're needing some help. And if they've been a very abusive person, it's very difficult for the other person to say, I'm going to help you, or I'm not going to help you. Or if the person that they acted upon is the one who needs help, then you get a very abusive situation even further escalating. So it's really important, I think, and I've spoken about it many times on this radio show, is that if you feel you've grown up with that and you really haven't taken care of that in your life, you really haven't looked at those things throughout your life and done something with it and gotten some counseling and some help and maybe made changes, it's really important to do a lot of your end-of-life paperwork ahead of time, because when you do end up in these healthcare situations, then you can fall back on, you know, this is what I really want, without being able to being thrown into it and further perpetuating that abuse. I'm sure you may have come up with some conversations on that over your many decades of, you know, in this process.
Oh, yeah. Here's the thing. If you've got a let's go back to this thing where, because I think this is the arena you're talking about, when you have a family member who has just been a real pain in the butt, mm-hmm. and now all of a sudden they need all this care, and they're thinking everybody's going to rush to help them.
Right.
And that's an unpleasant situation, and it's mighty hard to care for somebody when you are resentful to them. It's mighty hard to care for somebody that you feel is responsible for a lot of the heartbreak in your life. And you know, try to push a wheelchair when your fists are clenched. I mean, it ain't easy to do.
That's right.
And so you can. Here's how you do this, though. You realize that, number one, they've made choices in their life. And you are not poor planning on their part does not constitute an emergency on yours.
Yes.
Now that may sound cold.
If you could put that phrase on a billboard, I think that would set so many people free from the agony of saying, I have to, I should have, I would have, I could have, and here goes my life, here's my ticket, I'm cashing it in, you know. And a lot of people,
obligation,
there you go down.
Well, caregivers, they struggle with three things. See, I don't wake up every day and try to figure out how to deal with the healthcare system in this country. I learned that decades ago. I've never lost an appeal with an insurance company. I don't struggle with that. Even though that's been a big part of my life, I still don't struggle with that. That's a self-correcting problem. You either have been responsible and have done what is necessary to get health insurance, or you're going to be at the mercy of a system that is going to overtake you and eventually take all your treasure away from you, and they'll figure it out. I mean, but these guys in Washington got everybody snookered thinking this thing is so complicated. It's not. I mean, what do they know in Washington, by the way? We're $18 trillion in debt, so they're obviously not a bunch of, you know, brain surgeons up there. But the thing that caregivers struggle with is not the healthcare situation. That's a one and done. You either fix it, have it in your life, and have that place settled, or you don't. What caregivers struggle with is the fear, obligation, and guilt.
Yes.
Fear, obligation, and guilt. It's a fog, which leads to heartache, anger, and turmoil. I call it fog hat because I like 70s music. So that's funny, by the way, Dr. Jeanette. Go ahead.
Yep.
Do y'all not have a laugh track here? Because this is funny stuff. That's good stuff.
I
right there.
I know.
But anyways, the fear, fear, obligation, and guilt. And that obligation is what you're talking about. And that obligation is a petri dish for resentment. I mean, it is only a matter of tiny steps when you feel obligated to care for someone that you start resenting them. And that just takes you down a dark, dark, dark path. And that is no way to live. And if they've made choices like this, you do the best that you can. But you are not responsible to fix their situation. Now, if they have come up short and they've done such and such, you know what? They've made their decision. I am a firm believer in allowing people the luxury of enjoying their own decisions.
Mm-hmm. Living out their own karma.
I have taken care of my wife. I have done the responsible thing. I have made sure she does not have, she's not even had 1 minute gap in insurance, and I've changed policy 6 times, and she's been uninsurable since 1983. I worked in jobs I didn't like. I did the responsible thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a very difficult time being asked to subsidize people who aren't willing to do what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very big proponent of allowing people to enjoy the consequences of their own decisions. And I'm sorry, however tragic it is. I was at Walmart the other day, and this guy, this druggie, I was there, and I looked over there, and he's laying there on the floor, and some people are clustered around him, and he's going into kind of a seizure. He had been huffing the chemical spray that you use on your computer to dust it off with, the dusting spray.
Oh, yeah.
The aerosol. Mm-hmm. He'd been huffing that stuff. They had just kicked him out of the store the day before for doing the same thing. Now he's fallen down on the floor, cracked his head, and he's bleeding a little bit, and he's going in kind of a seizure, and they're calling the paramedics and so forth. And I'm looking at that, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is tragic, but this guy has a real serious problem, and he's been continuing to perpetuate this thing. Who's paying for the ambulance?
Mm-hmm.
Who's paying for the paramedics? Who's paying for the emergency room visit? At some point, what are we doing as a society that we're not allowing people to enjoy the consequences of their own bad decisions?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sorry for that, but what do you want me to do? I didn't do this to this guy. I didn't make him go in there and start putting stuff up his nose. I'm
mm-hmm.
not responsible for how other people make decisions in their lives. So therefore, we caregivers need to understand that you may have a family member that has smoked and poured liquor by the gallons down their bodies, and they have done all kinds of terrible things. They have been abusive. They've been ugly. They've been all these kinds of things. Why is it now, when they're all pitiful, that you've got to rush to rescue them? I don't
mm-hmm.
think you do. I think
mm-hmm.
you're gonna. They've got to experience their own experience, and you know what? They got a savior, and you ain't that savior.
Yes.
Let's talk
a little bit about the function, of being a savior or fixing it or being able to save them. I mean, that's the time when you have to look. We weren't just dropped by storks. There is a God in this world, and that's very, very important.
I tell people, look down at your hands. Do you see nail prints? Well, this ain't yours to fix, then, is it?
Because mm-hmm.
I have tried to rush to the rescue for my wife, and I've tried to rescue things and rescue and rescue and rescue, and all I did was create more problems. When I stopped trying to get up in her business and just let her live her life, she's going to fall. She's going to make a bad decision. And it may affect me, it may not, but there's not a whole lot I can do about that. I heard of a couple the other day that was, one of them was an alcoholic. And the other member of the marriage decided, okay, I'm going to make sure that he doesn't drink. So you go around and take all the bottles and you
mm-hmm.
observe them all the time. You never let them out of your sight and all that kind of stuff. Well, what you've done is you've compromised one life for another one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he may stay sober, but you're going to have to sit on him the whole time. How's that going to work for you?
Yeah.
You could chain him to yourself. Well, that's no way to live your life.
No.
And that's why I go back to the same with hope for the caregiver. There is hope that you can live joyously even while looking at harsh things. Harsh things. Harsh and grim things. And it's painful, and we can weep together. But it's not going to help anybody if you rush in to a burning building.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to help anybody. You've got other people. You may have a wife, a kid, you know, whatever. You've got other children to think about or whatever. There's more than just the needs of this one individual who decided to light themselves on fire.
Well,
and that sounds harsh, and I don't mean it to be harsh, but if somebody wants to argue with me, they're certainly welcome to make their point, but I don't see it any other way.
And, you know, Peter, in closing, let's touch, I think, also that brings us to the point of what is real healing. And so many people say that, look at them, they're still not feeling good, so they aren't healed. Or they say, I see all these medical conditions, so they aren't healed. The doctor didn't fix them. I mean, I know this better than, I see this all the time. People will come into me with their great big plastic containers of all of their medical records from all of their doctors, and they'll say, here, you know, and they say, here, you can review all these and get back to me and where we're going to go from there. And then my question is always to them, what are you asking of me? What are you asking me to do? And many times people will say, I want my daughter to be normal if they have autism. Or I want my lab reports to say perfect. I want them all within range. Or I want this disease label to be gone. And really, I really just work on healing, and the real healing is just of your spirit, your soul, and your heart. All of that other stuff, your physical body, is not really that. While we can do what we can, there's still, you have to have love and compassion, and you have to have a soul and a spirit, and that's really where you have been able to continue on your path in your life, is you've got to have the healing of the heart and the soul, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, the aging rate of in this country is still at 100%. And the mortality rate is still at 100%. And there's some things that are just not going to be fixed in this lifetime. My wife is missing both legs. Well, those aren't going to come back. And there's, you know, when you slam into a cement abutment at 70 miles an hour, things are going to get broken that are just not going to get fixed in this world. My niece with cerebral palsy. My cousin's daughter with severe brain trauma. I got a buddy of mine who went through all the horrific stuff of hemophilia in the in rural South Carolina, where I'm from, in the 1950s and 60s and so forth, and then he contracted AIDS from a bad blood transfusion. Some things just ain't going to get fixed. We're not going to have happy endings all the time. But we're not promised happy endings in this life. What we are promised is that we can have strength for today and bright hope for tomorrow. That we're promised that we can live joyously today, even while look at grim reality. Go back and look at Elie Wiesel's book of his time in the Holocaust during the concentration camps. And he learned to appreciate the joy. Solzhenitsyn left a Russian gulag after 20-something years and said, "Bless you, prison, for the change that you've made in my life." And history is full of people who understood a depth of joy and understanding and of tapping into the fabulous that is life in the midst of such horrific realities. If we wait for everything to be coming up roses for us all the time before we decide to be happy, we ain't going to be happy. You know, you can be as happy or as miserable as you want to be. That's just the way it is. And that's the way adults look at life. And one of the things I love about dealing with caregivers, that for the almost 100% of us, I've been looking at, we deal with adult stuff. We're not we're not looking at this like children. We see it for what it is. It's hard. We get scared. We get frustrated. We get weary. We get resentful. Get angry. But we're still dealing in adult matters where we're trying to be responsible. We're trying to do something that is helpful and needful and responsible for another human being. We're putting somebody's needs ahead of our own. That's an adult thing to do. And I deal with adults who make adult decisions. And if somebody, you know, that great philosopher Ron White, I don't know if you know who he is. He was with the Blue Collar Comedy Tour with Jeff Foxworthy and Larry the Cable Guy. But he said, you know, you can't fix stupid. If somebody wants to be stupid, let them be stupid. I can't fix that. What I'm trying to do is reach those people who are getting up every single day and recklessly sometimes putting themselves between disaster and somebody who is broken. And they're doing it for no other reason than they just love them and they want to do the right thing. And sometimes they lose sight of even how much they love them, but they still get up and try to do the right thing just because they're so it's just hardwired into their DNA. And what I want to do is put my arm around them to the best I can and say, here's how we can calm your heart down so that you can do this and not make yourself nuts doing it and not kill yourself. Here's how you can look after your business. Here's how you can look after your job situation. Here's how you can look after your money. Here's how you look after your own health. Here's how you look after your lifestyle. Here's how you can laugh, even while doing this. I tell jokes. Heck, I'm one joke away from being a nightclub act. I mean, I love comedy. And yet I look at some harsh things, Dr. Jeanette, and I've had to over many, many, many. I can't tell you how many hospital corridors I've stood in by myself watching a gurney go down to surgery and wondering, is she going to come back this time?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this has been my life since I was 22. I'm getting ready to turn 52. This is 30 years.
Wow.
And so I've learned a few things in this. Now, I don't own it. I'm learning it. I would never dream to tell you that I have arrived here. I can just now tell you that I've learned a few things about it, and I'm working towards this. And this is what I want to offer to my fellow caregivers.
And your message, I think, Peter, is heard loud and clear, and you're a perfect example of sharing your story to help others. And I think that's where so many people, sometimes they're afraid to tell their story, or sometimes they're afraid to be present in their story because then it makes it real for them or others. And I think it's very important for people to say, you know, that I need help, I can get help, how can I do that? And I think listening to you today was a really wonderful time to be able to say, you know, I'm having all those feelings also, I might have been down that road also, and I'll be okay. And also about your book, to be able to pick it up again. The book is Hope for the Caregiver. And Peter, can you share a little bit with us about how others may be able to find out about more about your work? That would be great.
Just go to caregiverswithhope.com. That's the easiest thing to do. Or if you can text the word CARE, C-A-R-E, to 64895, and you'll get a text message from my radio station and with a link to it. But 64895, text the word CARE, or just go to caregiverswithhope.com.
Well, Peter, it was wonderful to have you with us today. It's been an absolute pleasure for you sharing your story and how others can get some help also.
Thank you so very much, and I just let me know if I can ever be of service again.
Well, Peter, thank you so much. I know everybody needs to have some words of encouragement at some times, and this is a great timing for this story. Thank you.
All righty. We'll see you next time.
Thank you. If you'd like to find out more information about Peter Rosenberg, his link is on the bottom of today's show page. Please click on there and you'll go directly to his website. Again, it's Peter Rosenberg. He is the author of Hope for the Caregiver, Encouraging Words to Strengthen Your Spirit. It's an absolutely wonderful book. If you know anyone at all who is helping others who need some help or who is just of that age where it might be coming in their forefront to take care of elderly parents, or if they're taking care of children or grandparents, it really doesn't matter. Anybody could just pick up the book. It's a great book. It's small. You can carry it in your purse. Please do check it out. Again, the book is Hope for the Caregiver. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure to have you with us on the radio, and have a great day. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Alternative Medicine and Wellness. It has been a pleasure to be with you, and we hope you found more information that will be able to make your life just a little bit easier. You know, it's not an easy trip all the time in this life, and sometimes we say, you know, if I could just maybe hear it from somebody else, or maybe hear that someone else's story might be similar to mine, or maybe just gain a few extra tips to make my journey a little bit easier. Please join us on Health Blast Radio every day for the year 2015, where we will be having so many different practitioners, all kinds of authors, just regular people like you and I, having a casual conversation about a different topic almost every day. Check out our website for more information on the Women Over Age 50 group. It is drjeanettegallagher.com. You can always just Google my name, Dr. Jeanette Gallagher, and you will find out so much more information about upcoming radio shows, about other websites I have, other programs we are currently doing. And if you just need help, please pick any of the websites, any of the links, and send me a private message. Thank you so much for joining us today on Health Blast Radio. It's been an absolute pleasure, and please, just in the morning, before you reach for that cell phone or the television remote or even your glasses, open your eyes and say, thank you, God, for another day. It's been a pleasure. And have a great day.